As always, I welcome you to our service today. If you're a guest with us today, we're glad to have you. We always try to present a family connection, and I feel very strongly about that, and I think we're blessed here to have a family connection. Sometimes that means that we share each other's joys, and sometimes that means we're sharing the happiness and the great things, but other times that means that we're sharing sorrows and sometimes even things that have to be negative. And yet that's the advantage of having a spiritual family, is that you can share from all of those angles. This morning, the topic kind of leads us toward the negative side of things. And frequently, we don't like to talk about negatives or sad kinds of things. But one of the good things about presenting Scripture in order is you come across both kinds of things. And that's what we'll deal with this morning. About 20 years ago, Terry and I went to see the movie Message in a Bottle. We weren't familiar with Nicholas Sparks at that point in time, and so we were kind of shell-shocked as the end, and many of you remember that end, and I won't spoil it for you except to say it doesn't end well. Came out of the movie, and we're walking along, and I said to Terry, I said, "Are you okay?" And she says, "Yeah, I'm fine." She said, "After all, it wasn't a true story. The author made up an ending, and I just made up a better one." And to this day, she'll say, "Didn't happen that way. It happened another way. I like it happening in some kind of situation." I'm not one for sad movies. I sometimes see sad movies, but not on purpose. Sometimes they turn out that way. Terms of Endearment, you know, looks like a great comedy, and then all of a sudden they switch it into this disaster kind of thing. My philosophy of that is quite simple. There's enough pain in life without seeing it on the screen. I didn't need to watch it on my television. I don't need to go to the movies and pay to see it. There's pain everywhere. We can witness that over and over in our lives. As James is about to conclude this book, he's going to share a difficult section with these brethren who are these dispersed Christian Jews who are living away from Jerusalem and I think probably wondering about the time frame. And he gives them some information that's going to be challenging, to say the least. We'll start in James chapter 5, going to verse 7 and going down through verse 11. "Be patient then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crops, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, or you'll be judged." The judge is standing at the door. "Brothers and sisters, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we count as blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy." And there are certainly encouraging things in that section. He's going to mention the farmers. He's going to mention Job. He's going to end with that extremely positive statement about the God is compassion and mercy. But what about that first sentence? "Be patient then, brothers and sisters." Be patient for how long? Until the Lord's coming. I would certainly hazard a guess that when they either read that or heard that in the assembly, it was painful. They're hurting. Things aren't going well. They don't have what they want. They aren't where they want to be. They would love for James to say to them, "This is just about over. Hang on for just a little bit longer. Just a little more patience, a little more tenacity, and you're going to see the clouds roll back and the sun's going to shine and everything is going to be good." That's not what he tells them. He tells them, you can anticipate that this may last until your physical, temporal days are over. The Lord's going to come again. Now, a lot of people read this, and I want to get this out of the way, and very critical of James and other Bible writers by saying they really didn't understand the context of Jesus' return, and they probably didn't. Probably if they could look and see that we're here 2,000 years later, they would be quite shocked at that. At the same time, James is not hiding out in some misunderstanding here. He's telling them that you're going to be in this situation until Jesus comes back. or until you go to meet Jesus. And that would have been something that probably would have been a very, very difficult for them to hear, as it would be difficult for us. James said in the beginning of the book, very first thing, James chapter 1, verse 2, immediately after the introduction, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Go into it joyfully. Go into it positively. It's going to be useful to you. You're going to learn something about it. And he saves for the end this information about the likelihood of how long this is going to take. He's not talking about difficult patience. He's really talking about endurance. We would call it maybe perseverance in those kind of situations. I can remember in high school sports, we had coaches who just kind of did whatever they felt like doing, you know. If they felt like running everybody that day for 2 hours, then that was what they would do. Might depend on what mood they were in or how many snacks they had with them or how loud their whistle was or various kinds of things. And in my experience, this is in the later part of the 60s, in my experience, there were guys coming in who didn't do that anymore. They actually prepared practice. And some of them would even have to actually post it. So you knew exactly what was going to take place. And what an incredible difference that was from not knowing what was going to happen to really knowing what was going to take place. In the first instance, you couldn't use up all your energy. You didn't know how much more you were going to need. And so as James steps forward here, he's saying, I need you to know it's going to be a while. I need you to know as you complete this marathon. I need you to know that as you manage what you have in reserve, this is going to be a long and difficult process. A couple of things kind of come into conflict here. The reality of this is some of this stuff isn't going to be fulfilled until after your physical life. The promises of God, we often look and say, God, when is this promise going to be fulfilled? And I think often he would whisper back to us, not here. It's going to be on the other side. That's where that is going to actually be fulfilled. Because God sees life very radically different than we do. Basically, we value life. We want to have another day. We want to have another breath. We want to have as much life as we can. And our behavior recognizes that. The way we approach our physical health and the health industry is to provide as much time as people can possibly experience. And maybe you've had friends or maybe loved ones who've decided, I don't want any more treatment, or I don't want any treatment at all. And to watch the response of that, there are people who really will push very hard, people who will beg. No, you can't do that. You can't make that choice because we believe very strongly in having as much time as we possibly can. Some people understand that the time isn't going to be the kind of time that I would want to have. You may remember the poem by Dylan Thomas, Do Not Go Gentle Into That Good Night, Rage Against the Dying of the Light. It's what we typically want to do. And yet when you flip that over, you see that God has a totally different perspective than we have. And this idea about having one more day or one more moment or one more breath is not something that comes from God. He approaches it in a totally different way. In Isaiah chapter 57, verse 1, the righteous perish and no one takes it to heart. The devout are taken away and no one understands that the righteous are taken away to be spared from evil. Romans 14, verse 8. If we live for the Lord. If we die for the Lord. So whether we live or die, we belong to the Lord. And Paul's going to say something very similar to that in other places. It's not about whether we get to stay or not. It's about our relationship to God. You may recall the king Josiah at the end of Judah, 2 Kings chapter 22. They find the book of the law, and they're so sorry for the things that they haven't done. And Josiah attempts to lead in reforms and putting things back that need to be there. And God is very, very pleased with Josiah. He is so pleased that he gets a reward. And here it is. Because your heart was responsive and you humbled yourself before the Lord, when you heard what I have spoken against this place and its people, that they would become a curse, be laid waste, and because you tore your robes and wept in my presence, I also have heard you, declares the Lord. Therefore, now just think about it with Josiah for just a minute. God's saying to him, you've done all these good things. Now here's your reward. I will gather you to your ancestors, and you will be buried in peace. Your eyes will not see all the disaster I'm going to bring on this place. Guess what, Josiah? You get to die early. Is that really something that we could wrap our head around? I don't want to die early. Maybe I want to see a little bit of the disaster. You know, I don't want to be gone. That's not something that we feel strongly about. We feel positively about at all. God looks at it totally differently than we do. These people from the book of James, these refugees, what did they want? Well, they probably wanted a better life. They probably wanted more like the life that they had left behind. They may have actually wanted to go back to where they were and experience those kind of things. But I think we can probably say pretty conclusively that they wanted the trials to be over. They wanted to be past those things. And yet we don't always get to do that. The writer's going to put several things in front of him that are designed to encourage them, and they certainly do. The example of a farmer. And you don't have to be a farmer to understand what farmers go through. But probably many of them had links to that kind of profession. But even if they didn't, they knew that a farmer's dependent on the rain, dependent on the seasons, depending on the weather. And all those situations have a great impact on what happens. And so sometimes things go well, sometimes things go great. Here in Oklahoma, you get all that rain and the farmers are watching and it's like, wow, things are going so well. And then the midsummer storms come and the hail destroys everything that they were looking at. It can change so quickly and so easily. And those people would have understood that. He pulls up for them examples of the prophets. You know what the prophets went through. You know about Elijah and Elisha. You know about Daniel. You know about Ezekiel and on and on. And they would have potentially been encouraged by looking at those situations. He even uses Job as a standard of perseverance. And while Job is a great story, and at the beginning of that book it tells us what Job had and that it's all taken away, and at the end of that book it tells us that those things are replaced, and yet, can you replace people? Job lost his children. Job lost his family. Job lost his wife. Just because he gets another child doesn't mean that there's a replacement there. We all know and understand that. God's trying to say, I think, to these people, this is your new normal. This is life as you're going to continue to live it. The encouragement that he provides, though, is, but remember, I am a God of compassion, and I'm a God of mercy. I really do care about you. And although some of the promises that I've made, some of the promises that I am making, are going to occur on the other side, I want you to know that they really are. We walk by faith and not by sight. We don't see everything that God is doing. We don't understand that everything that God has planned. We don't completely comprehend all of the things that come our way. But we can be confident, no matter what is happening, that our God is compassionate and merciful. As I thought of the families, I couldn't help but think about the prayers that a family might utter. The dad could say, Father, I'm so tired of working so long and so hard for so little, only to be able to provide this hovel for my family. My children don't know that I was a respected man back home, that people cared what I thought. Jehovah, please let us go home. Let my family see me as I really am. And mom might say, my sisters are there. They see my mother and my father every day. They go to temple together. They gather for Sabbath together in the special feast. Elohim, I just know that if I were back there, I could lead my family to your son. The kids might say, Father, we miss home so much. We're so left out here. They hurl vile names at us every day and yell at us to go home. Adonai, please, let us go back home. And God says, no, you can't go back home. Why not? Because I'm a God of compassion and mercy. And to the hearer, that wouldn't make any sense. Wait a second. We're asking you to be compassionate. We're asking you to be merciful. And you're saying, no, we can't go back. They could even get a little testy and say, give us one good reason why we can't go back home. And you could almost hear the voice of God whisper, the Romans are coming. The streets of Jerusalem are going to run red with blood. The temple is going to burn and topple and collapse. The desolation is going to be so great that there won't even be any vegetation left. You don't know what's coming. I do. I love you. And I have such compassion for you. I have such mercy toward you that I'm going to keep you here, safe, even in an unpleasant situation. There are things that I need for you to be doing for me. And I hope that we can remember that. There are times when we don't see the other side. We won't see the other side. We don't know the other side. We get home and somebody says, how was your day? And you say, it was a horrible day. And God could whisper, you don't know how bad it could have been. You don't know what you missed. You're actually home. You didn't have to be. We can get wrapped up in all of those kinds of complications. And when God says, trust me to be compassionate and merciful, if we have the faith to do that, we can understand that no matter the circumstances, no matter when things come back to us, God is still in charge and he's still taking care of us. I mentioned in the beginning the movie Message in a Bottle. After that movie, Terry and I both became Nicholas Sparks fans, not because of that movie, but because we started to read his books. And for several years on vacation, we would both read the same book and talk about it. And that was a lot of fun. His best book by far is The Last Song. Now, you may have different ideas there, but I love it. It's a great book. And it's got sadness in it. But the sadness doesn't come out of left field and just bowl you over. The sadness is something you know literally from the beginning. And the story is about coping and preparing and dealing with what's going to take place. And God, in his loving way, looks to these people of the dispersion and he said, here it is. Truthfully and honestly, the challenge is to deal with it in my way and to deal with it through my resources. All kinds of challenges in your world, all kinds of challenges in all of our worlds. And God says to us, I love you and I'll help you through if you stay on my side. If you need to respond to the invitation, we'd encourage you to do that right now while we sing this song together.